No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Tonight's going to be a little bit of a different show because tonight we're saying goodbye to Maria, who's been on the show for 6 years. So if you want to say goodbye, call in at 888-627-6008 and let Maria know how much you've appreciated her being on the air this long. Maria, are you there?
I am here, Michael, and it's real bittersweet for me.
Me too.
6 years is a long time.
You know what? 6 years to the day. It's funny that you started the show in October of 2015. This would actually be the sixth your 6 year anniversary today, and that means that you've been on the air with me for approximately 300 shows, and that's just amazing.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Let me tell our audience how all this started. You know, I started this show 8 years ago with a friend of mine on a lark, basically, who wanted to reach out to America and tell America how we felt about certain issues, and include the fact that the people in the District of Columbia don't have their rights. You know, we wanted to produce a show that was interesting and might give people a platform to discuss issues and brought forth this very important issue to the people of the District of Columbia. After 2 years, my co-host had to leave because she took a job with a nonpartisan group that didn't want her on the radio or on the internet with a Democratic politician. So I didn't know what to do. And I came up with this brilliant idea, brilliant that I am, and which was to have 4 or 5 women that I knew be co-hosts. Now, I didn't know Maria at the time, but she...
Wait a second. You forget. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Twice I was a guest.
She was a guest on the show, and I really liked her. And I thought, you know, maybe I would reach out to her among these other women to be on the show. And Maria said, when I talked to her, that she'd be willing to do it every week, that I would need these other people. And I was shocked, and I had no idea what to expect. But what I got was this wonderful person who changed the show completely. You know, this was me and my buddy getting on the radio or getting on the internet and talking. Maria really made the show much more professional. She stayed with it for 6 years. And we are today what we are in large part because of you, Maria. And, you know, we've had the captain of the space shuttle and Dan Rather and Michael Steele and the governor of Virginia and senator from Louisiana. We've had all these big guests on our show. And, you know, back in the day when we started, we had like the mayor of the smallest town in Arizona, a guy, you know, a guy who who trained coyotes to like or to like people, you know, whoever we could get. We had lots of fun people, but the quality of guests that we've had in the past couple of years has certainly changed the show dramatically. So you're going to be sorely missed, and we're going to have to, you know, I don't know what the future is going to bring, but I didn't know what the future was going to bring when we revamped the show and you were on the show. So I have great faith that we'll go forward. We start on a new radio station next week. We're going to be carried also on WEAC Radio here in Washington, D.C., AM, FM, and Internet. So we're excited about that. So it'll be a new page for both of us. Mm-hmm. So why don't we start there? What's your new page look like? Where are you going? What's up with
you? So I was thinking about how many milestones I went through since October of 2015, and it's incredible, but one of them was I got my first master's degree in clinical psychology in 2017. A son got married in the same month of 17. I had both of my hips replaced in that same month, June of 17. And on it goes. And after I got my first master's, I thought I was going to become a marriage and family therapist. And what I realized is that I have such empathy that I carry forward the pain of the clients that I see, and I can't leave them when I leave our therapy sessions. So my children are like, well, gee, Mom, maybe you picked the wrong profession. And yeah. It was like, no, clinical psychology was really important in shaping my knowledge of the field, but I don't have to have clients per se, or patients, depending on what your degree is, but it's going to help me move forward with being a consultant with entities and organizations, which is what I decided I would do once I got my PhD, is that I would advise other causes who are trying to do good things for this world and help them with their, how it is that they're falling short or what have you. So fast forward that the topic that we've mentioned before, female genital mutilation, and how the United Nations and the World Health Organization and UNICEF, to mention some of the big players, considered it an atrocity, but nobody seems to be making a discernible difference in getting the practice eradicated. So I focused my dissertation, my research on how we can do that. My testing has proven how we can do that. So my results, I just actually pushed send on my final document of my dissertation, which will be edited this week, but then it will go to my full committee by the end of the week so that I can defend it and graduate, so that now I have founded my own nonprofit called Stop the Cut! ! Is part of the branding of it, so that I can help these other organizations too, and I can do it with my nonprofit so we can get this scourge off the planet Earth once and for all, which is based in centuries of practice. It is not religiously mandated. It happens all over the world, including the United States, the United Kingdom, the European Union. It is not a person of color issue. It is a global issue about violence against women and basic human rights violation. So that's what I'm going to be doing.
Well, and it's important work. And we're proud of you for doing it. And let me tell you something. Nothing will thrill me more than to refer to you as Dr. Sanchez. We have a caller on the line. Karen's called in. Karen, are you there?
I am.
Oh, do you have something to say?
Yes, it's been such a pleasure to work with Maria. And I have one thing to say. Don't go!
Karen, yeah. You have, why don't we share with the listeners, you have been instrumental on negotiating and securing the overwhelming majority of our guests. And it's Absolutely. Through your tenacity and your ambition and your stick-to-itiveness that you've made it happen. I mean, the senator didn't even mention some of the folks that we had as a guest that were running for president.
Right.
On our
program.
I mean, Karen, you have been amazing, and it has been an honor and a thrill to be able to be a part of all of that, because it's all of your imaginations.
Great. Now she's going to ask me for a raise.
Which she deserves.
She does deserve a raise. And she, how can you leave a person like Karen? I don't get it. You're right.
She's Believe me, right. This is not easy. This is very difficult. It's tear-inducing for me, because I have enjoyed, it's been an honor and a privilege not only to be on the air with you every week, but to get to know you and to get to know Mrs. Brown has also been an honor. Because you too, I adore. You're just precious.
Well, thanks for calling in, Karen.
Karen, thank you.
Thank you so much. Don't go.
Too cute. And since you mentioned Mrs. Brown, unfortunately, Mrs. Brown is out of town dealing with an emergency, but she wanted me to make sure that I read the following to you. She said, "I'm so sorry that you're leaving the show, and I know Mike is sad too. Everyone has enjoyed your perspectives and views on a spectrum of topics discussed on Shadow Politics. Maybe you will consider being a guest host from time to time." Yes. Best of luck. Best of luck on your future endeavors, and please don't be a stranger. If you're on the East Coast, we better know about it and be given our 10 minutes. All the best, Pat. She thinks the world of you.
And it's a mutual admiration society. Yes. I really value what she has done as a woman, a wife, a mother, and a career person, and an educated person, because it's not easy.
Yeah, no, she's got a tough job with the kids, and you know, that's one wonderful thing, is that she cares. She does, much like you, she does what she does because she cares about the people she works for, and she knows that the work's important for kids, and the work you do is important too. And you know, when you first brought this up, we did a show on this, and we had guests on about female genital mutilation. And when you first brought it up, I looked into it. I thought it was a difficult subject to discuss. I still think it's a difficult subject to discuss. But when I read about how many women this affects worldwide, even how many women it affects in America, I was stunned. And I said, to myself, difficult or not, we have to talk about it, right? It's got to end.
And that's this part of the just, problem. It's about
yeah, and this is just
genitals,
crazy,
right?
Yeah, and it's
I don't
just
know how to respond to that.
I don't know exactly what I want to say. It's something that we need to end, because it's a crazy practice. And you're right. It's just a ritual. It's very anti-women. I mean, it's like the most horrible thing I've ever heard of to try and keep women in their place.
And by and large, it's perpetuated by mothers, and that's also the atrocity. So I do a lot of my research is about what other scourges have been on our planet and how were they eliminated or eradicated. And it takes a whole lot of moving parts for that to happen. But one of the easiest examples is polio. In 1985, there were 350,000 people who had polio in the world. And together with Jonas Salk and the World Health Organization and UNICEF and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Rotary International, there's less than 1,000 cases now. But look at how much time, effort, energy, and money that took. And that was only 350,000 people. We're talking about 200 million women.
Yeah.
200 million women.
That's more women than we have in the United States.
That's correct.
We have somebody that's called in. Is that right? Is there somebody on the line?
Anise.
On line one, Anise, a dear Anise. Friend of the show. Thanks for calling in, Anise.
Yes, thank you so much. I just want to tell her how much we are going to miss her And we really credit her with spreading the word about D.C. statehood outside of D.C.
You're so sweet, Anise. And Michael, why don't you tell the listeners what an advocate Anise is to the D.C. for statehood campaign?
Anise is the soul of D.C. statehood. She's been an advocate for this even when people did not advocate for it. There was a bill to give the people of District Columbia one vote, and many of us went for that. We capitulated. We said, you know, one vote's better than none.
Yeah.
Right. But not Anise. Anise stood up and said, no, equal is equal. There is no such thing as being almost equal or you know, kind of equal.
I can't take all the credit for that. We have to give Ms. Killingham credit for kicking you and saying you're not going to support that.
Yes.
Ms. Killingham get the support for that.
Yes. Ms. Killingham was another, unfortunately, she's no longer with us, but she was another staunch advocate. And yes, she held our feet to the fire. And of course, we've just lost last year a dear friend and advocate, and that was Faith, who also was a strong advocate and was always on my rear end about doing something, you know. But Anise has been the voice of reason and given us great strength. And if there is somebody that is the ultimate advocate for our cause, it's Anise Jenkins, and we love her and we're so glad that she's an inspiration to us all.
So Anise, how is it that you've kept the faith? How have you been able to stay the course? How have you keep turning out?
I'm an American citizen, and I need to be treated with all the rights that I should have. I pay taxes, but I shouldn't be disrespected the way I am without statehood.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, there's really no other better way to say it. That's really what the bottom line is. We do everything
that
every other does.
But you've
started on taxation without representation. There was a war about that, I believe.
it was a war.
If history serves me correct.
That's right. You know. And we don't want to have to go to war over it.
No,
yeah. And you know what? I grew up with women, strong women like Anise Jenkins, my mother, my grandmother, you know, they were the same way about things in their lives. And, you know, she's just been an inspiration to me because she reminds me of the strength that they had in standing up for things. And you know, that's really what it takes, right? It takes people that have enough commitment and enough courage to stand up. And Anise is one of the bravest people I know. She stands up and speaks her mind every chance she gets. And you know what? In the beginning, I was embarrassed when I would talk for a one vote in front of somebody like Anise, because I knew where she stood. And I said, I want to stand with her. But nobody was standing over there. She and a handful of people who were brave enough to stand up. You know, we were all standing with our delegate and the people in power. And you know, that was not the right place to stand.
They have shifted positions and they are standing with us.
Yes, they are.
That's well said.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's well said.
And it's because of women like you and Maria Sanchez and other women that are out there speaking about this that they have come around. They've come around to this is the one way to you know, resolve the situation and finally make us equal. I mean, it's so simple. You can't be equal in the United States of America without being one of the United States. Anything less than statehood is less. You know, we're all on an equal footing, if you, you know, politically, if you live in California or Connecticut, it doesn't matter. You still have two senators. You still have a representative based on your population and that votes. And we don't have any of that. And it's ridiculous. And much like the issue you're about to embrace, it makes no sense. And it's just a part of a cultural tradition and a ritual. You know, when the guys started this country, they didn't know. They didn't know what democracy was going to be, for God's sake. People actually ruling their own government. So they didn't give women a vote. They didn't give African Americans a vote, or Native Americans, the people that had owned the country. They didn't give any of these groups votes. They didn't give Revolutionary War soldiers, veterans weren't allowed to vote unless they owned property and they were white and they were male, you know, because they didn't understand. But all these groups have been brought back in, except for the District of Columbia. We're still out there in the cold, and it's time to open the door and let us be part of a more perfect union. Thanks for calling in, Anise.
Thank you, Anise.
Thank you. And we're going to miss you.
Oh, you're sweet, sweet. It's been a pleasure to know you, and I'll keep following you.
Thank you.
I always get the biggest kick out of her.
Yeah, well, you know,
truly inspirational.
She really is, and she works hard at this and volunteers at it, and she really is the soul of this movement. Everybody accepts her as such, I think, and she's right about Miss Killingham and Faith and other people that we've lost along the way who were advocates, and it's time to resolve both these issues. It's time to resolve this for the people of District of Columbia, and it's time to resolve genital mutilation for the women of the world. I mean,
Michael, there's still 11 states and the District of Columbia that do not have legislation allowing it on
a
state
level.
We're
going to change that. We're to change that.
And I'd be happy to work with you on one of the first projects, because that's Virginia enacted it, I would say, in the last year and a half, and Kentucky within the last year. So it's still very much being a part of the legislative process, but it's a state by state. Even though the government enacted the Stop FGM Act on January 5, 2020, you know how federal and state can be different, and that's what happened in Michigan, because Michigan threw out the federal legislation in 2017 saying that they overreached. So it's complicated, but if anybody knows how to navigate that labyrinth, it's you.
Well, I don't know that that's true, because we're still not a state, but but I can tell you that quite frankly, that the people of the District of Columbia are not in favor of this practice. I guarantee you.
I would imagine.
Knowing the people of the D.C. the way I know them, they would not be in favor of this practice, and they would support legislation to end it in the District of Columbia. So we're just going to have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say that it's never been, you know, there's no law against it in the District of Columbia, because we just have never thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, if we think about it.
Well, just to let the listeners know, there's 513,000 females in the United States that have been cut. And California, I think, is the largest state with the cut population. And so I hate to say this, but it's alive and well here. And there are, I know of three women that have come public, some with their first and last names, others with just like the woman in Kentucky who inspired the legislation. In Kentucky, they're calling it Jenny's Law, because that's her name is Jenny. But she's a white Christian woman. She was taken with her sister out of the country and cut when she was 5 years old. There's another woman who was cut in the early 40s. She's still alive, white Christian woman, because at the age of 3, her mother caught her touching her genitals and decided that she needed to stop that at the pass, took her to the doctor who cut her clitoris off. And she's been very vocal about, she gives her first and last name. And she was actually at an event that I was a keynote speaker at 10 days ago in the audience as an activist, because people think that it happens over there and that it happens to people of color and it happens to people of a certain religion. And these brave people are saying, no, it doesn't. It happens everywhere.
Well, you know, and I'm old enough. I'm in an age that, you know, I have some understanding, I think, of the mentality. You know, we used to say about my grandmother that she told all of her grandchildren, she had a lot of grandsons, and she told us all about, you know, she lectured all of us about sex, but she didn't say anything to any of her three daughters. You know, she,
really?
they were totally ignorant of everything because she figured ignorance was the best thing for them, you know, or they believed in anyway, in a bunch of cultural myths about it, you know, like you couldn't sit on a boy's lap or you'd get pregnant, those kind of things, you know. But yeah, but my I'll tell you a great story. I was a teenager and my grandmother told me a story. I was with my cousin. My cousin was about 40 at the time, and I was a teenager. She was a lot older than I was, and we were sitting on a swing, and my grandmother told me this story. She told me this story about a beautiful friend of hers who was one of the most wonderful people in the neighborhood, and everybody loved her, and she was an upstanding, wonderful person, but she couldn't go out of her house anymore because she lived in such shame because her grandson had gotten a girl pregnant out of wedlock. And she told me this great story, and in the end the little girl wasn't the victim, the little boy wasn't the victim, the baby wasn't the victim, the only victim was the grandmother. And my cousin looked at me and said, are you getting this, Michael? Have sex with a girl, kill your grandmother. That's how it works. You got that? And I said, yeah, I've got that.
Bring shame and dishonor.
Yes, and you know, and that was really their attitude, you know, was that, yeah, so I understand a little bit how crazy these cultural things can be and how, you know, they're perpetuated from one generation to another,
I got an example of that this month with the passing of my mother. So my dad passed away in September of 17. And from that day forward, my mother wore black only.
Yeah.
Period.
My
black
grandmother too.
Only.
Yeah.
And as she lay dying earlier this month, her best friend, neighbor, nurse for 50 years was over a lot. And I mean numerous times every day, because her last 5 days she just went from okay to terrible. And at some point I said to her friend, who happens to be named Maria also, and I said, you know, my sister lost her son earlier this year in May, and it's been a terrible year for our family. My sister's son being 38 years old from an accidental drug overdose. Yeah. And my mother's best friend said, your mother never said a word about that to me. And I was, you're kidding. You guys know everything about each other.
Yeah.
She said, you are giving me the news. I never heard about this. And all I could think about is my mother's shame was such that she couldn't share that with her best friend.
Yeah. That's another thing from another generation too, you know.
Yeah.
My father abandoned our family, and we always had a story about it. You know, we always, you know, my father was in California doing business. And
sure.
You know, I used to say to my mom, who the hell goes on a 2-year business trip? What is he doing? Is he, you know, like he's buying up all the real estate in California
and going to send for us when he secures
his
place in life?
California to succeed from the union? I don't know. But yeah, it was all about pride. It was all about, excuse me, we used to say, don't do your dirty laundry in public.
Right.
And it was all about image. We need to change those things.
Well,
and they're hard to change. You know, I said this on the show many times that my wife calls me a theoretical feminist, because I believe in feminism for everybody but her and my daughters, and I believe all women should be equal except them, and there's some truth to that. It's hard, you know. I would be thrilled if my daughter said, "Daddy, we're going to live at home all our lives with you," and just, you know, and and we're going to act like we're 12-year-old girls, because that's, you know, the way I'd like to keep them. Of course, my kids don't say that. They say, "Wake up, Dad," and you know, So, but you know, we have Don. Don wants to say something. Don, are you there?
I am. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Gosh, Maria, you've been such a light and an inspiration to so many people, including myself. I'm going to miss you, Don. Dearly. I'm going to miss you dearly.
Thank you so much, Don. Don and Doug are the owners of BBS Radio and everything that goes into it, including engineering the broadcasts. And the two of you are able to move and change course as the wind blows and the guests don't show, or the number is bad, or the connection drops, or the technology fails us. And you guys are nonplussed all the time, which is staggeringly amazing.
I thank you. You know, I truly do. But to be honest, Maria, it'll not quite be the same without you. You're like a light among us all. You're the best of the best, and I'm going to miss
you
so
You're
much.
Very sweet. Thank you for that.
It's all
very
true.
Very touching.
Thanks.
Very
Thank
touching.
You. I Thank wish you only the very best on your journey. You're going to do great in anything and everything you do. You always do, and I know you're going to be a shining light as you continue on. And just know we can't wait to hear from you, hopefully constantly on this show as a call-in, but...
Yeah, exactly.
You're so sweet, Don. And best regards to Doug, please.
Oh, my brother's right here. He wants to say a few words.
You're sweet, Don.
Oh, of course we're going to say a few words. this show, like Don said, wouldn't have been such a great success without you. You're so smart. The way you analyze the conversation, the questions you bring to bear. Not many people that I know, and I've done this industry since it started into new media, have that sort of talent. You have a keen mind, a very kind soul, and on your journey in life to make a difference, I know you're going to succeed, and I appreciate you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
You're very, very sweet. That touches me greatly. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's really the point of the show, isn't it, Doug? That she has a keen mind and a kind soul. And that's what every liberal Democrat in America should understand about Republicans, that there's plenty of them out there that have keen minds and kind souls. And we have to reach out to each other and find those people and coalesce around the idea that this is a great country and we should all contribute and we should all listen to each other and continue to make opportunities available to everyone. You know, I've had more, I think Maria would agree with me on this. I've had great opportunities in America. I don't think I would have had these opportunities anywhere else in the world. I think it is the greatest country on the planet, but I also see it for what it is, and that those opportunities need to be expanded to more people. They need to be continue to be expanded to women and people of color and people that don't have the means, you know, people who are less fortunate. But, you know, I hope everybody realizes that if you're a liberal Democrat, that Maria is not an anomaly. There are Republicans out there like her. I know plenty of them. And you know, I think we don't understand that sometimes. We just vilify everybody. You know, if all you have to do is tell me what party you're in and I know all about you. Mm-hmm. And that's wrong. Trump.
It's interesting because most of my friends are Democrats and they're moderate Democrats, and they'll tease me all the time about you have the wrong initial after your, you know, name, because we, like you and I, Michael, we agree, I don't know, 85 to 95% of the time, because I'm ridiculously liberal socially, ridiculously.
Well, you know what? I still fight with my conservative Republican friends. It doesn't stand in my way. I love them. I have a dear friend who you know is a right wing Republican, and I had to leave a message for him the other day, and I said, "This is the Nancy Pelosi Foundation, and we're collecting money to replace the Washington Monument with a 675-foot statue of the Speaker of the House. Would you contribute?" You know, so he called me all infuriated. You know, so but in the end, we both had great respect for each other, and I think that what you need to accomplish that is you need to find something in the other person that you respect, and there's so many things about you I respect, Maria. This guy I'm talking about, I respect that he was a veteran, mm-hmm. that he's an honest businessman that did business with me for 25 years and never cheated me once or never let me down. He's a family man. I don't think that he and I have one political idea in common other than we like America. But other than that, we don't agree on anything, but that's okay.
Because and that's what I figure too. I have a member of my family that is a QAnon anti-vaxxer and is very public about it. And she's actually been kicked off of Twitter and Facebook and a couple of airlines because she refuses to comply. She obviously isn't vaccinated. And yet I love her. And I have another girlfriend who's a nationally syndicated radio personality that lost her position recently because she refused to get vaccinated. So those people are in my life. And while I disagree with their choices, it doesn't mean that I don't care about them as human beings. So, and then I've got my son who just got his booster on Friday, and he's 32 years of age. So, you know, my family goes all over, and so do my friends. But yeah. I think you made the bigger point is America is great. I hate to use that statement because it's been co-opted, but we are a tremendous country. And I think at the end of the day, if we would recognize and acknowledge that, and we're flawed, and we're imperfect, and we're comprised of human beings who are also flawed and imperfect. But because we have so much that we have to be proud of and that we've done in the 200 years that we've been in existence, I'm hoping that people will realize that's really what matters, not these petty little turf wars and these disagreements about who, what, where, and how. Because really, I think that's the lightning rod that's going to keep us together as a fabulous country.
Well, and yeah, and you have to understand that you know, and accept that's so much to build on. I mean, there are things that need to change, but the foundations are strong in America. We've seen that. We saw an insurrection in our government, which failed. Mm-hmm. Not only failed because I'd like to point out the D.C. police intervened, mm-hmm. but also failed because most of America stood up against it. Now, some Americans haven't stood up against it. They care more about their agenda than they care about the country. So they morph this and make it sound like it was some kind of patriotic, something patriotic that was done, when in fact it wasn't. It was anti-government, anti-American. Most of America has stood up against it, and that just tells you who we are. We're still a great country with people that still care. And you know, every time there's a disaster in America, I don't have to tell this to a Californian, because you're living it day by day, but you see how people pitch in, how they just, you know, we had a guy, this is recently, and this is such an American thing, I think. We had a guy that was driving across the bridge and saw, strangely enough, this was locally, that a car had hit the bridge railing and the little kid in the back seat had been thrown out the window in his car seat and thrown into the river.
Oh, my goodness.
And the guy, all he did was get out of his car and jump in.
And, oh, my gosh.
And get the kid. The kid was in about, I guess it wasn't that deep, but he grabbed the kid and was able to keep the kid above the water whilst some guy was fishing with his daughter in a pontoon boat and witnessed what happened. And they rushed over and pulled the two of them out of the water. But, you know,
wow.
Yeah, he didn't think twice about it. He didn't think about the danger. You should have seen this bridge. It was like he went 20 feet or more to before he hit the water, and the water wasn't that deep. He could have gotten killed just jumping in. But and the baby certainly would have drowned. The car seat certainly would have sunk.
Of course.
Yeah.
And
he was strapped in, right. And, you know, but I think we hear about that, things like that, all the time, that during disasters we see people respond, Americans that respond, and we saw it with 9/11 and New Yorkers. You know, everybody complains about New Yorkers, right? They're mm-hmm. rude and they're, but not after 9/11. They all mm-hmm. pulled together. My former co-host Kathleen, who was in New York at the time, she lived in New York, and watched, literally stood on the roof of her building and watched the trade centers collapse with her neighbors, talked about how people just came out into the street with water and food and mm-hmm. and sheltered people that were walking and didn't know where to go, were disoriented, and the ferry boats were picking up people, and people were just picking up people and in their cars and, you know, doing whatever they could. And that's really what America's about. You know, we have that sense
in us. And I saw that with the American Red Cross when I was a volunteer. I was deployed at times, and one was a hurricane in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And I was in a gymnasium with 400 other volunteers sleeping on cots because there wasn't power in the community. And these people came from all over the United States to volunteer to help to the people that were affected by the natural disaster. And if 400 people in a gymnasium is a lot, so yeah. I was lying there at night thinking, my goodness, I'm surrounded by angels on earth.
Well, yeah, there's so many people out there. And that was the purpose of our show. We tried to reach a lot of those people, and we're running out of time here, Maria.
Yes.
And, you know, I have a few things to say. I don't know where shadow politics will go right now. We're going to have to figure out a way to carry on without you, but you have changed the shape of this show and you've made it what it is today. And I'm not sure, you know, we're going to have to find a different way to do things, because there's no way to replace you. Look, we have Deborah. Deborah's called in and she wants to say something.
Deborah.
Yeah, let's hear from Deborah. Deborah, are you there?
I am here, Maria. I love you. You've been such a great gift for the show. And
Deborah,
I'm so appreciative for all the time that you've put into it and all that you've given it. And I finally made it up to the cabin after power outages and fallen trees.
Gosh.
And yeah, well, Northern California, we're having a huge storm here. So I'm just grateful that I got through, and I just wanted to wish you the best and say that I love you very much and thank you for all that you've
Deborah,
given.
Deborah, thank you so much, Deborah. You are also integral with the success of the broadcast. You have been
thank
amazing
you.
And tireless with all of your efforts and all that you've been through with what has happened to California. And here you are, still keeping on, keeping on.
Yeah.
I know. I feel like I'm an old James Taylor song. I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It's so weird. Yeah, but Maria, I wanted to wish you well. You are so intelligent, so articulate, so erudite. You've brought so many great things to the show, and I hate to see you go, but I know that, you know, other people will receive you in the same way I have and Michael has.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah, so much.
And you know what? I'd be remiss if I didn't point out today is Deborah's birthday.
Oh, you took the time to call in. Birthday, too.
Yeah.
My daughter's birthday, too.
Oh, is it? She's a Scorpio. Yay, Scorpios.
And we're like, oh,
yeah.
We've already sent texts back and forth, of course. But happy birthday, Deborah.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I came up to the cabin to be alone. To kind of do some inner processing, like I did after the fires, and I got my dog Tippy here, and we're.
I was going to say you're not alone.
I'm not alone with my dog Tippy.
I love Tippy.
No. Yeah. So Maria, I just wish you the best. I wish I could live closer to you because I think we'd be great friends if I did with your baking or your trying to bake and your love for psychology and your love for women. So
thank you. So well said. Thank you. I do love women.
Yeah.
And one other thing that we have to point out about Deborah. Deborah does PR and other stuff for the show, and she really has been a part of the family and has made a big difference in our show. And and that's why I'm glad all these people came to say goodbye to you today, Maria, because they're all part of the family. Karen's a big part of the show, Doug and Don and Deborah. And and we really have, you know, not that any of us ever set out to do this, but we really have become like a family. And I'm so proud of everybody that works on this show. I'm so proud of Karen and so proud of Deborah and Don and Doug and you. We've really done something that really I started on a lark because I didn't know what else to do, you know? I was like, there's a part of me that, you know, everybody, I guess, has dreams in life, and my dream job would be to be a local disc jockey. I would have been so happy because I love popular music and I love to talk, and when I was a little boy, my mother had a radio show on NPR, and she took me into the studio with her when I was about 6 or 7, and I was just blown away. I was blown away at all the equipment. It was a different era, of course.
And it's a great medium still, because the thing about radio is there are no dress rehearsals. You don't get a second take. It is responsive to whatever's going on, unlike television, where even if they break through, you still have a whole bunch of things going on behind the scenes, whereas radio is as real as it gets.
Yeah, it is real. And this show has been real. And it's been a labor of love for all of us. And I appreciate it. You should know, if you're out there listening, we the people that get paid for doing this get paid so little that I'm embarrassed by it, really. But we don't have more money to pay them. They don't do it. They don't do it because they're getting wealthy at it. They do it. Do it for a whole bunch of other reasons. Maria has volunteered for 6 years. For 6 years, she's done this week after week after week. And as Deborah points out, she's been amazing in as a part of the show. And she volunteered to do it. It's just
that's because you just add another zero to my paycheck.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go. We didn't, you know, as a Democrat, I'm proud to say I didn't add to your tax burden. I'm one of the few Democrats that you've ever known that you didn't have to pay more taxes. to deal with. so we're proud of that. But
Maria, will you come back at some point and be on the show sometime again?
Absolutely.
We'd love to have you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my work now with this nonprofit is being recognized nationally and internationally already by people who know how passionate I've been for decades and that I'm actually doing something about it. And they want to start giving me publicity. And that's one of the reasons that I needed to pull away from shadow politics, because I didn't want to dilute what goes on here with shadow politics and or compete with what it is that I'm trying to do. So that you would call those dual roles, I think, and I'm not a fan of that.
Well, and you know, I can guarantee you that Maria will be back, because we'll sick Karen on her. Karen is relentless.
Yes.
That's how we get. I'm telling you, some of the best guests we get, I'm absolutely convinced. They're like, well, I don't know about going on the show, but I'm tired of hearing
again.
Let me just get on the show and you
get it over.
Done with it. Get over it. Get it over.
Oh, my goodness.
So we'll
Maria,
you are an inspiration.
You are, Deborah. You're really great too, and you know, it's really a sad moment, but it's also a moment of great hope. You know,
this
is what it's all about, and this is, you know, this is why I was never a conservative, because I looked at the universe and I said, there's only one thing that's found in everything. It's found in rocks. It's found in people. It's found in the universe. There's nothing that we've ever encountered that doesn't have this one quality. And that is change.
That?
It's change. Everything changes. And I think you have two choices. You can either try to fight against the change, which is like standing against a tide, or you can figure out how to make the change the most constructive that it can possibly be. And, you
Absolutely.
Know, and we all come to these points in our lives, you know, Maria, right? We raise children and we, you know, and we send them out into the world to live good lives. And you know, there's so much change that goes on there. It's amazing.
Change or die, really.
Yeah.
Change
right.
or die, exactly. That's what my old boss would say.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And
you know,
it's you're right, Michael. It's a part of the human condition and a part of the universe. And so you can either grit your teeth and hold on, or you can just go with it and get the best out of it, because it's a given.
And it can be a world of wonders. You know, look at my children.
Yeah.
I have three children that grew up and didn't know anything. Now they know everything. You know, you need to know something. You need to know anything in the world, ask one of my daughters. They'll tell you exactly the way it is. And they're always telling me. And the best part of it is that I was her teacher, and now I found out that I don't know anything. They know everything, and I don't know anything. So,
Humility.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Maria,
thank you,
I love you. I love you.
Love
I'm
you
glad
too,
I got to like pipe in the last part of the show. So
thank
I know
you
that
so
you're
going to
play a song. You're welcome, Maria.
I'm curious
we'll
what Michael selected.
I'm going to play
please,
a song. And there were so many songs that I could have picked. I could
yeah,
have picked.
What did you pick, Michael?
Uh-huh.
I could have picked. I thought about picking "I Will Always Love You" by Dolly Parton.
Oh, I cry on that one.
Yeah, because that's absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
Or you raise me up, because that's also absolutely the truth. But I came back to the number one breakup song of all time.
Oh, what is it? Well, let's hear it then.
it's Neil Sedaka with "Breaking Up Is Hard to Do."
Aww.
So Maria,
Maria,
we love you. We love you.
We love you. We miss it. We're going to miss you. But you are always welcome back. Always.
Right. Thank you so much.
You have an open invitation.
Love you.
I will take you up on that.
This goes out to the great Maria Sanchez, soon to be Dr. Sanchez. Soon, we hope to change the world. God bless you for all the time and effort you put into our show. We love you, and this song goes out to you.
Thank you.